I'm Chris.
And I'm Kylie. And this is Redefining Resilience,
where we explore what it means to build a resilient lifestyle
so you can thrive in any and every situation. All right, Chris, I need you to do everything I say, okay?
Why?
Because I said so.
Okay.
Well, you mean you're not bought in?
I mean, it was one hell of a sales pitch.
How many times did you get the because I said so as a kid?
Well, pretty much every day.
I've got a few examples here.
These are great.
So don't sit too close to the TV. Because you're going to go blind.
Blind. Like you will lose your eyesight.
Yes. You cannot have the car light on while we're driving in the dark.
You will die.
You will die or get arrested. Big consequences there. Don't turn the music up too loud because you're going to go deaf.
Or you'll wreck.
Oh,
You'll wreck the car if the music is above a volume of 2.
And we'll die.
Yes.
You cannot take more than one bounce on the diving board because you're going to hit your head or your neck and you're going to die.
I heard that one a lot.
Yep. Don't cross your eyes because they're going to be stuck like that forever.
You know, I actually researched that when I got a little bit older because I've heard that so many times. It's physical impossibility.
So. Wonderful. Wonderful. Don't swim for an hour after you eat.
Yeah, I heard 30 minutes, but it just depended on how frustrated my parents were with the way I was acting.
So I will say, my childhood friend Monica did throw up a cherry dilly bar after we ate lunch, and it was a giant mess in the pool. So that one might have some truth to it. I don't know. But it was one I heard a lot. The problem with all of these phrases is it usually is followed by because I said so. Mm-hmm. Or we got directives from our parents when we were younger that ended with, because I said so, anytime you asked the question, why?
So that's an interesting statement, because I said so, because it absolutely stifles any and every bit of science inside of a human. That means I am not allowed to ask questions. I'm not allowed to be inquisitive. I should never question authority. And anything that comes down the pipe from somebody above me, I should just do it. Like, that is a very detrimental way to raise a child.
It is. And the other part is we stifle any ability for a child to understand critical thinking or consequences. Mm-hmm. The because I said so doesn't teach me anything about why I shouldn't be doing things. And like all of these examples we gave, it's really just generational knowledge being passed down over and over again. Right? Because I'm sure most of these phrases that we got told were told to our parents by their parents.
I mean, I remember the phrase, if you do this, your dad will lose his job. Like, I don't understand that even in the slightest. I remember being 5 years old being like, I really hope if I ask dad for a Snickers bar, he doesn't lose his fucking job. But like, when you're a child raised by people that don't understand or didn't understand how the brain develops and how we learn and, you know, the nuances of the human system, it was just do it because we're just trying to protect our time. We're just overloaded right now. So just shut up, do what I tell you to do and move on.
Yeah. Well, and for inquisitive minds who are trying to rationalize something, it doesn't teach us anything. So now, as adults, we lack necessary critical thinking skills or strategic planning skills. And when we think about what the reasoning domain is all about, which is where we're at right now in our resilience model, we have to relearn these skills.
So just for a little clarity, we didn't necessarily need those skills back in the day.
When we were just surviving.
Well, not even that far back as cavemen. When we were in World War I, we had thousands and thousands and thousands of people dying every week. 20,000 Germans a week died in that war.
Do you remember those days?
I do. It was just like yesterday. when we lived in that time, those people left war and came home and lived the life of you do what I tell you to do because I tell you to do it. And if you question it, you will die. That's how they lived. And then they taught their children that. And they taught those children, taught their children that, and went to war. They had a second world war that was the same concept. Do what I tell you to do, or you'll die, or you'll be court-martialed. But you have to do what the system tells you. You don't get to question it. And you're just bucking the system. You're not paying attention. You're not a good person. You're liberal or whatever they would say, like I heard when I grew up, because the system in the military created the general populace. Everybody was in war. I mean, 99% of America or some crazy number like that went. So that whole generation raised us. So it's not necessarily their fault. That's just how they were raised and they learned how to raise others. The crazy part is now we're in a position where we understand the human body and the system that we're living in to a point that we can question it logically, scientifically, emotionally. And we actually have data that backs up the fact that that doesn't work. We're still pressing against the generation ahead of us or before us that wasn't raised like that. So it's a learning curve for them and us at the same time. The issue is it's just at such higher intensities.
Well, we have more information available to us now than ever before, right? When internet came out, it modernized how we share knowledge. And there's just so much more knowledge and research out there that we can get our hands on. And now we can understand that some of this institutional knowledge that we once knew to be true is actually not true. Like, you're not going to cross your eyes and stay stuck forever.
Do you know we used to think smoking cigarettes helped with lung cancer?
That's ironic.
We used to think that voice problems, voice box problems, were fixed by the smoke from cigarettes, were relaxed from the cigarette smoke.
Wow.
We used to think it was beneficial to have beer in the morning. Beer was actually the number one breakfast drink before coffee. Number one. That was super normal to have a beer with breakfast.
There's been some mornings where if I had a beer for breakfast, I'd probably toss my cookies.
Yeah.
Because I probably had still some beer in my system from the night before.
So to say this is the way we've always done it or because I said so stifles growth. And you have to question the whole concept behind science is questions. Like, you are not a scientist if you don't question things.
We have to be discerning because the news that we consume is now created by Joe Schmo next door who has a phone that has a camera and has a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Anyone now can put information out into the universe, and we have to be able to decipher what's real, what's not, what might be an opinion, what is fact, how do we know? So it's crucial now more than ever that we develop some reasoning skills that can help us think through problems and find solutions and use our resources to our advantage to help us meet our goals and solve problems.
So that opens up some interesting questions. How the heck do we do that? Where do we start?
Well, we've got a few different tools in the toolbox when it comes to reasoning. So first tool that we talk about is introspection.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah, it's just asking yourself questions. When I think about what introspection is, it's just being the observer of your thoughts and asking yourself questions and trying to understand your own behavior. You know, why am I upset right now? Why did I get so frustrated earlier? What triggered me in that situation? How do I feel? Like, even just naming your emotions is part of introspection, because a lot of times we feel anger and we don't know why. And so introspection helps us get to the bottom of the feelings, because then we can get through the feelings.
For me, it was essentially sorting out a giant jigsaw puzzle of life inside of my head. I had to give myself a framework of how I operated before I could figure out how I was going to progress. And the only way you can figure out how you're operating is to be honest with yourself.
Well, and a lot of times we have to think about our beliefs and question our beliefs, because imagine all of the things that we said at the beginning of this episode, if we believe those to be true and we're believing things that aren't actually true, doesn't that lead us to a logical conclusion that maybe some of our other beliefs might not be serving us?
You mean it's healthy to question the things that you do on a regular basis? Wow.
I'm probably not going to change my political beliefs. I'll be honest. But there are some other beliefs that I have, like, oh, I'm not good enough for that. Or I'm not, you know, fill in the blank on some sort of negative statement that I have about myself. Or I'm not smart enough to accomplish this. Or I don't have what it takes to become a millionaire. Or, you know, they can do that, but that's not me. That's just not who I am. You know, a lot of those, they're called self-limiting beliefs because they limit your ability to achieve more in life. So those are the beliefs that, you know, I would first start by questioning.
So it's interesting. You're talking about self-limiting beliefs guiding you. They actually build what's called talk tracks in your noggin. If I believe if I take two jumps on a diving board, I'm going to slip and fall and break my neck, I am believing my human body is very fragile and is susceptible to life-altering or ending injuries quickly.
Well, and you know what that little kid's going to do? Probably not jump on the diving board at all because they're too fucking scared that they're going to die.
You don't find realistic boundaries. You don't actually find out what happens when you get hurt and how far you can press yourself until you get hurt. I had a guy in the gym the other day stop me and go, man, aren't you like really scared about getting hurt? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Scared of getting hurt? Hurt is just data, brother. But a lot of people view injury or problems or pain as something so terrible and so life-altering, they will do anything, even to their detriment, to stay away from it. I will make sure that I can't get hurt, so I just will never work out. Okay, well, that's a way to do life, but where did that come from? What belief were you told or thing you were told that you believed that you implemented in your life that made you so scared of failure or pain or pressure that you've limited your life? I mean, it's outstanding what "don't sit too close to the television" actually turns into.
Well, and I think you bring up a good example, because there's a lot of people we talk to who are like, oh, I can't work out or I can't lift weights because of X injury and or X surgery I had 8 years ago. And it's funny because the very thing that would protect you from getting injured again is building strength, but you're not doing it because you're too scared that you're going to get hurt again, but you're going to get hurt because you're not strong.
So the cycle is this constant, like, basically it's mistake after mistake after mistake. So like, I'm not going to work out because I'm scared I'm going to get hurt, which is a mistake. Then you get hurt because you didn't work out, which is a mistake. So then you're scared that there's another potential injury. So you make less decisions or worse decisions, removing yourself from the first thing you should have been doing in the first place. Mm-hmm. Should have been working out. If you don't take care of the system falls apart. So the talk tracks are huge. I think we get into that with pretty much everybody we talk to, but it's just predicated on a belief system.
Yep. Next tool in the toolbox is resourcefulness. And shout out to one of my old bosses, because he was the first person that I ever heard use this word, resourcefulness, and it changed my life forever, because I was working at a company where I was the go-to person for any questions that anybody ever had. Everyone came to me, whether it was like, I can't get my computer to work, or I don't know how to print, or we're out of you know, batteries, or how do I find this document, or how do I do this thing on the computer? Like, I was the go-to person for every freaking question anyone ever had. And it was when he said, let's be resourceful, that I realized, like, the reason people are coming to me is because I'm resourceful. Like, I know where things are at. I know where my resources are, and I know when to pull them out and use them at the appropriate time.
So the question then is, how do you become resourceful? How do you figure out where things are? And the answer to that is...
GTS. Google that shit.
You have to be okay with, one, not having the answer, and two, failure. The only reason you figure out your boundaries is you fail. So then you understand when somebody comes to you and says, hey, this thing's not working. It's like, well, I know the boundaries of this thing now, and I understand that you can't go this far. So here's where we're going to play. Here's your safe zone. Like, here's where I know that you can operate. And it's like in the gym all the time, you know, well, I don't want to get injured. It's like, brother, you are so far away from injury. It's not even funny. I don't want to overtrain. Good luck. If you tried as hard as you could, you couldn't. You're so far away from the end, the thing you're scared of, you just can't see it. You've never, it's like all dark in front of you. But you become resourceful when you expand that dark area, when you find your failure.
It's picking up the flashlight and turning the flashlight on so you can see in the dark.
Yeah. And it's using other people. So when I opened my gym in Kentucky, I wanted to be the best powerlifter on the planet. I absolutely adored powerlifting. For people that don't know, it's just squat, bench, and deadlift. It's pretty simple. I got on Instagram and I messaged every single professional powerlifter on the planet. Every one of them. It was like 60 guys that were top totaling guys. Almost all of them messaged me back, and I sent them all my programs. I asked them all the questions. Guys would tell me to quit messaging them. That was annoying them. But the only way I was going to learn is by finding the people that have done it.
That's what Rob talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn from other people. Learn from their mistakes. Learn from their knowledge. People are resources. Tools are resources. I joked and I said Google that shit. But for real.
Google it, man.
Google it. Yeah. Do you know how many? If somebody looked through my Google history, it'd probably be embarrassing the number of questions I ask Google. But the only way I can learn is by getting answers to my freaking questions.
Yeah.
So I have to be resourceful. I have to use the tools that we have at our disposal. There is absolutely no reason this day and age you can't figure something out.
My daughters will ask me questions, and I'll look at them, and I'm like, aren't you on your phone right now? Like, I guarantee you Google is 1,000 times smarter than I will ever be.
Yeah.
Just Google it. I don't know.
Okay. Honestly, we don't even need to pick up the phone because we can just ask Alexa questions. I mean, I was asking Alexa about the lymphatic system the other day.
Yeah.
Like, I learned a whole lot from her.
It's just being willing to look silly for asking a question. I have never, ever, ever looked at a client that has asked me a question, no matter how fucking crazy it's been, because I've been asked some weird questions, if they're in the pursuit of knowledge. If they just want to know, why the hell are we doing this? What happens? Why does my toe hurt during this? Or like, what happens with my wrists? Great fucking question. Or when my kids say, Dan, why is grass green and sky blue? Fucking awesome question. Awesome. There's so many answers I don't have because I've just never asked the question. But they're being so resourceful. Hey, Dad's a smart guy. He's way smarter than I am. At one point in time I was. He must know. And if he doesn't know, who does?
Yeah.
And they learn this knowledge. They learn how to be inquisitive.
Well, and if you manage people and you're listening to this right now, I know your instinct when people come to you with questions is to answer their questions. However, we might be doing them a disservice and robbing them of their ability to flex their resourcefulness muscles by giving them the answer. We are training them to come to you for everything. And now they're reliant on you for answers and problem solving, and they don't learn how to develop those skills themselves. So one of the best pieces of advice I have, if you have people that report to you, is ask them, how do you think you'd solve that? What have you tried? What do you think is your first step in trying to solve this problem?
So I hired a young trainer on at a gym here in Indy. And she, I mean, if there's green, what is it called? Green behind the ears, is that the saying? She had been a trainer for about 15 minutes. And she was tasked with creating protocol for two children's classes. She came in with this sheet of paper with all these words and numbers and everything all over it. Hands were shaking. She's like, classes in 15 minutes. I don't know if this is going to be good. I said, just throw that away. You've seen this happen before. What do you think would be a good class for these kids? What do they need? She's like, well, they kind of just need to run around a little bit. Awesome. Awesome. Let's lean into that. If they need to just run around a little bit, that is what they need. It's not what you need. It's not what their parents need. It's what the client needs. So like, there you go. You've already opened the door. You're already in it. You've answered your own question.
Yeah.
But if I would have answered it for her, not having the context of what was going on, i.e. like a lot of bosses I've had, when I come to them with a problem, they want to hear just the problem and they give you a solution for said problem. There's all this context around it that you don't understand because maybe the person with the question doesn't know how to verbalize it, or they're new and they're nervous and they don't want to overload your time.
Or they've left out details that they don't think matter, but might actually, in fact, matter.
Yeah. And if you let them cultivate it and you give them the autonomy to be resourceful and be okay to fail, then they do beautiful things. They create actually a phenomenal program that is still carried on at that gym for the kids that age.
Well, and even just helping them think through options, right, and consequences of each of those options is how we develop critical thinking skills.
Well, it's the only way to develop critical thinking skills. You can't look at somebody and say, well, now I want you to be a critical thinker. Like, well, it's not really real. You know, you can't do that because you don't have time in finding the boundaries.
So this brings us to the next tool in the reasoning toolbox, which is prevention and planning. And I love some planning.
That's beautiful.
I would plan like every minute of my day out if I could, but I would probably become a psychopath if I did that. But I do plan like my lunch breaks, my snack breaks, my breakfast, like all of that stuff is in my calendar, even dinner, like all of my meals are in there, because if I don't put that stuff in my calendar, I don't have any sort of trigger or reminder to help me do those things. And it seems like basic human needs, like eating, right? But when you get into a flow or you're hyper-focused on your work that day, it's easy just to plow through things. So I plan everything out and I think about, okay, every single week, what are my top priorities for the week? It helps me stay focused on the things that really, really matter and tune out the distractions and the things that aren't as important. Because if I am constantly reacting to everything that comes up during the days, I mean, it's a constant barrage of other people's priorities or the things that other people find funny or important. Like, I just think about how many notifications we get on our phone on a daily basis. Like, if I ran my day from my email inbox, I would not get anything done.
It's the difference between busy and productive.
Yes.
I've had a lot of jobs in my time. I used to run a CVS. I had a lady that worked for me that was so outstandingly busy all the time, but was the most unproductive human I've ever been around. I mean, she would start 16 different fucking projects. She would have mountains of just stuff everywhere that she was working on and was always sweating like crazy and just constantly running around and in panic mode. And I'm like, first off, this is a really tiny town and there's nobody in here.
It sounds like me trying to pack for a vacation.
It's like, what are we doing, man? You're not even remotely as bad as that. You're just ADD.
So yeah,
you just
it's
do like
true.
16 things in 16 different rooms. But It was such an astonishing thing to watch because she was burning so much oil trying to get all these things done, but wasn't actually doing anything. So we feel like we're productive when we're busy. And I know you've told me this a couple times. You kind of feel guilty when you're in alignment and when you're less busy, but you're very productive because you don't technically have to do a lot of things to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
I know my workouts are, the older I get and the smarter I get, the less intensity, the less things are in my workouts, and the more productive my workouts are. I actually get more out of less movement. It's coined the phrase for me now, minimal stimulus for maximum production. I do not want to spend energy I don't have to. I will not do it. I won't go into the gym and just arbitrarily do shit because it's wear and tear on my body. It's energy being spent, and energy has to be spent for a purpose.
Well, and just for an example, like, you've coached me in the gym, and if I'm bench pressing and after I've picked up the bar, I move my feet around or I shift my arms a little bit or I wiggle here and there, Chris will tell me that I'm wasting energy. Because it's not an essential movement for my body to accomplish the task at hand. And when you think about how that translates into the business world or how we spend our work days, it's the same concept.
Mm-hmm.
Checking that one email while you're supposed to be doing a different activity is a distraction that's splitting your attention between two activities, and it's wasting energy. Because you're not doing either thing properly.
Here's something I told one of the ladies that worked for me. I said, see how many times you can not click the mouse today. Try to limit it.
Ooh.
And she said, well, that's crazy. I'm like, I know. That thing should catch on fire sometimes when you're on there. You're just doing a million things. Why? Just try to limit it.
And a lot of times we default to busy because we don't have a plan.
Well, no vision equals spinning around at base camp. You get a lot of things done, but you're not heading up any mountain. You're just literally hanging out at base camp.
Yeah.
You're not going north at all.
Yeah.
But you're spending a lot of energy.
And for what purpose? So that's where we have to have the vision in place. We've got to set goals. And then from our goals, we can say, okay, what are my priorities? If I have these goals, what do I need to accomplish this week to chip away at that goal slowly but surely?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about, like, imagine a year is the equivalent of a deck of cards, and your deck of cards has 365 cards that make up the entire deck. And so if I pull one card out, that should be the equivalent of one 365th, if I'm using fractions, right, of my entire goal. So if I take 365 of those cards, it should end up being the equivalent of what I want to achieve in that year. So each day is an opportunity for you to make an impact. And if we were to multiply that one card by 365, are you happy with what that's going to turn out to be at the end of the year?
And it's a great analogy because the card is very thin, but a deck of 365 cards is fucking huge. I don't even think you could hold that in one hand.
It'd be like...
Especially in my little tiny hands. I can't hold. There'd be no way.
Chris, do not talk about your tiny hands.
But if you add it up, that's a lot of cards. So you make small changes every day, small effort every day, and they are tiny. Look at them. What does that Rob always say? I can't believe you can even hold on to the bar. I mean, they're thick. They're just tiny.
They are thick.
Yeah, it's like pickle fingers, man.
They are sausage fingers for sure.
But it's a small growth every day, right? 1% every day for 365 days is 365% better. Nobody in their right fucking mind would back away from a 365% progress.
That's
nobody.
Right.
Like, that would be crazy. But because we see it in 1% increments, and then we log into social media and we see the byproduct of 365 days of effort. We think we can skip it all and equal that.
It doesn't work like that.
You just can't.
Last thing, well, and just to reiterate, in life, if we're following Pareto's law, 80% of shit is preventable and plannable. It's the 20% that we can't control. But by controlling the 80%, we have more overall stability and control of the greater whole. And so it doesn't rock the foundation if we have plans in place. But, like, segue into our final tool in this reasoning toolbox, which is being adaptable. When that 20% hits, we can flex, we can bend, and we don't break. Because we've got plans in place, we know our vision, we're able to quickly bounce back and figure out how to redirect or how to take the detour and get back on track.
So the only way I have found for me and a couple of the clients I work with to understand that 80% is to do the controlled, uncontrolled variable exercise. And once you start listing uncontrolled variables, kids getting sick, getting a car wreck, breaking your hand, things that are out of your control, and then you compare it to the things you have control over, making your bed, brushing your teeth, combing your hair, feeling good about yourself in the morning, going to the gym, tying your fucking shoes, doing the laundry. You have control over mountains of snowballed things, tiny little daily actions that equal 80%.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to take control of the tiny things. When you look at people that have, I don't know, you cut them off on traffic, in traffic on accident, and they just lose their fucking mind behind you. They're just screaming and honking and hands out the window. It's like that guy, I can almost guarantee that guy or lady has a messy house. I bet that car is destroyed. I bet their job is in chaos. And this was just the tipping point. This was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yep.
Because I couldn't have done anything different. Life just happened. I wasn't paying attention. Whatever. This is just normal, uncontrolled variables. And it's tiny. Nothing happened. But because everything else is out of control, this tiny little 1% of 20 seems like 100%.
Right.
It's the only thing that matters. I got cut off in traffic. This person needs to die. It's like, whoa, man. Like, yeah. You have an aneurysm. Slow down.
Well, and then let's take the car accident example. When I got into my wreck, yes, it sucked. And I will argue that it is preventable. I will now leave a safer distance between me and the car ahead of me.
You have definitely changed the way you drive.
Yes. I drive like you now.
You're still a little faster than
okay.
I am. But.
but it didn't wreck my world. It wasn't something that I can't bounce back from, you know? And because I have so many other things in place that give me control in my schedule, it was easy to just get right back on track. Yeah, it was inconvenient to file an insurance claim, talk to insurance adjusters on the phone, reschedule one day of work to deal with this stuff, like go to the doctor for x-rays. Like, yes, it's inconvenient, but at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world.
It was inconvenient, not catastrophic.
Right.
Right? If you didn't have control of that 80%, which you do, I mean, we have a whiteboard in our living room. We write down everything. Diet, what we're talking about doing, goals, everything.
Top three priorities each week. It's simple things like outlining your top three priorities each week that help you make the 365 days add up to the goals that you want to achieve. Because everything is working backwards. You take the big picture vision and you work your way backwards. So if we were to say, okay, at the end of this year, I want to make $100,000 in revenue. Okay, what's it going to take? Well, if I divide $100,000 by four, because there's four quarters in a year, now I have $25,000 each quarter. Okay, in order to get to $25,000 each quarter, I need to close one new client each week. Okay. So now I have a goal of one new client each week. And so my big three for the week is going to be the activity that leads to me closing a deal each week.
All you're doing is reverse engineering. So that's what you do with programming for clients, for diet programming. I mean, you just find what the goal is. Like for me, I wanted to bench 405 for fucking years. That's all I wanted to do, four plates. And I just reverse engineered it. I knew where I was and I knew where I wanted to go. And I just, by reverse engineering, I figured out my time frame logically and then just worked that path. And the cool part about the path is it's not going to work out perfectly. There's too many variables introduced in anything in life to be a perfect, seamless process. But because it's not perfect and seamless, it makes the goal that much more vital. You have to have a plan because of the variability. If you don't have a plan, the variability is going to become so much louder and it's going to control so much more. If you have a plan, you can say, okay, yes, like my log press, I wanted it to be at 275 and I threw a huge fit because it was supposed to work and it just didn't. Okay, awesome, figured out.
Well, it's feedback. That's valuable feedback that can help you adjust your plan, or it might just mean, okay, that was a bad day and we need to try again. It was one data point, right? So failure is feedback. Use that data to make better decisions or make different decisions next time around and stick with the process. That's why people say trust the process. And I know it's so, it's cliche now. But you have to trust that if you stick to a plan and you execute consistently, the results will come. And you have to just trust in that because you're not getting the dopamine. You're not getting the reward immediately. And in today's instant gratification culture, we want the reward immediately. And so that's why you have to be resourceful. You have to talk to the people that have seen success and you have to trust that they know what the fuck they're talking about and they can help you.
The coolest part about this domain, well, in all the domains, and you'll see when we get to the end, they're all a part of each other. They all bleed into each other. They all, if you look at the reasoning domain, when you can say, okay, I need to be adaptive, part of being adaptive is resourcefulness. And being adaptive means I now have to lean on coaches. I have to lean on other people. I know when I worked at the bank, it was, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I have to pivot here and find people that do, and then I can redirect. But if I wasn't resourceful and I wasn't open to feedback and I wasn't okay with failure, I would have just pigeonholed myself in failure and would have never accomplished anything.
Yeah. Well, and going back to the car accident, at the time of the accident, if I didn't have this resilience training, I would have been in sheer panic mode after I hit that tanker and wouldn't have known what to do. I calmly, I don't know if it was that calm, but like in some form or fashion, I dialed your phone number. Then I talked to Caitlin and I put a plan in place. I called my insurance guy. Steve answered right away. I didn't have my auto insurance card, so he got that for me. If I hadn't thought to do these things, I wouldn't have been able to handle that mess so quickly and figure out what my next move was to get myself back on track.
What did we use when we first started this? The stub my toe analogy. You can't learn to not say fuck after you stubbed your toe. You got to learn that before. You can't learn resilience in a car wreck scenario. You can't. You've become too immersed in life. It's too heavy. It's too fast. It's too intense. You're toting between your limbic system and your prefrontal cortex quickly. And if you don't understand that relationship in your brain, you don't understand the chemistry, you don't understand the training, you can't lean on it. It's just like a competition. I can't show up and then go, now I'm going to learn how to do it. I can't learn in the moment. You have to learn and spend time way in advance in order to accomplish the things.
Yep.
Then you feel comfortable under the weight because the gym is just a representation of life. You just feel comfortable under the pressure because you've been there. You've done it. You've prepared yourself.
Well, and I think if we were to just summarize this whole reasoning domain, preparation is truly key. And knowing where your resources are, but also being flexible when things don't happen exactly the way you thought they would.
I think being open-minded to understand that we don't know everything. You're a different person every day, essentially, because the world is spinning super fast with a bunch of people in it. So you can make plans, but be prepared to change.
Yeah.
Every day, be prepared to change.
And this is what we're going to continue to dig into with all of this training. And we've got some more great guests coming on. So I'm really excited for what we're going to learn. We're learning just as much as you all listening are learning. We've got awesome resources that we've already had on this podcast and will continue to have. So keep listening. We're going to get through all six domains. We're almost halfway through.
Thanks for listening to Redefining Resilience.
To learn more about building your mental and physical readiness, check out odysseyresilience.org.
And follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok.